Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded us from. Thank you very much for doing that. Today we have a special guest, Eduardo Marcora. He is a professor at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. He shares two great areas, genomics and neuroscience. And so we're going to hear a lot about a recent article, groundbreaking, that will affect or may affect us as we study and learn more about neurodegenerative diseases and prevention of them in the brain. Thanks very much, Eduardo. And before we start, let me just say we have two sponsors, longevityplaybook.com. Go to their website, longevityplaybook.com, to find out about signing up for the free newsletter. And the other one, LifeFirstNaturals.com, the makers of both TruBiotics and Bovine Colostrum. Go to their website to see the double-blind randomized controlled trials, even in Italian soccer players, showing how it kept those soccer players on the field more so that they didn't have leaky gut or upper respiratory infections. Eduardo, the brain's a fascinating, and can I call you Eduardo?
Yeah, or you can call me Dado. Everybody calls me Dado for short.
Dado.
Whatever you like.
D-A-D-O for short. How did you happen to get into the brain? That is, what caused you to pick this as your area of science?
Yeah, I would say I got to it from interest in how the brain develops. Actually, let me backtrack. I started my biology research investigating cancer of childhood cancer, neuroblastoma, which is a cancer of the nervous system, central nervous system. And that interesting because it's unfortunately these kids form cancer even in utero. So they are born with metastatic grade 4 cancer. And this is sort of because of dysregulation in the development of the nervous system. So from that angle, I became more interested in how the brain develops in a way to sort of prevent this cancer from arising. And that sort of from the disease aspect to a more basic features aspect of understanding how the brain develops. And from there back to disease of the nervous system, especially the brain, first started with Huntington disease and then Alzheimer, both neurodegenerative disorders, because just so happened that my genetic studies of brain development led me to genes that are also causative of disease, of neurodegenerative disorders. So that's sort of, I started with disease, went into more basic research and went full circle back to disease, not cancer, but neurodegeneration.
And neurodegeneration is such a common and feared problem now. So tell us about how you worked with specific brain cells in this, specific types of cells, and how they affected our brain functioning. Tell us a little bit about that in the recent article.
Actually, this started from human genetic studies. So my lab combines both kind of computational and population genetics approaches, as well as experimental kind of standard laboratory research approaches. So this came from actually studies of the genetic factors that affect the risk of Alzheimer's disease in the common population, the sporadic forms of the disease, the common forms. And when we look at where these genetic factors concentrated in the genome of people affected with Alzheimer's, we noticed that they were concentrated in regions that affect the function of a specific type of cells in the brain, but not only in the brain, everywhere else in the body, called macrophages. So these are sort of, I would say, the waste collectors or the garbage cleaners of the body, both in the brain and elsewhere in the body. They're called macroglia in the brain, but they are the macrophages of the brain, and they are very similar to other macrophages in the periphery of the body. So
now macrophages in the rest of the body come from the bone marrow. Is that right? They're a hematopoietic cell or cell of the blood cell origin.
Correct. I would say There are two classes of macrophages. Macrophages that are derived from monocytes, which are, of course, circulating blood cells that come from bone marrow, as you said. And they can enter tissues. And once they enter the tissue, they become macrophages. There are also so-called tissue-resident macrophages, macrophages that when the body developed, they took residence into these tissues, including the brain. And they come from embryonic yolk sac, so a different source of early blood cells. So yes, the central macrophages, the macroglia, the macrophages of the brain is one of the few tissues that cannot be invaded by monocytes, unless there is, of course, major injury or breakdown of the skull, for example. But normally, in you know, without trauma, there is no infiltration of the blood cells, whereas in peripheral, there is infiltration. And so the original macrophages can be replaced by monocyte-derived macrophages.
So the blood-brain barrier, that's a barrier we have to keep infections and other invaders out of the brain, doesn't allow the macrophages in the peripheral blood or the monocytes in the peripheral blood to get across. So they're two separate sets of macrophages. And the macrophages in the brain, these waste collectors, are called microglia, as you said. Do they move around or do they stay resident in one place in the brain?
Yeah, they normally stay. They are present everywhere in the brain. They actually is very fascinating. They're very much patterned. So each of them kind of takes care of a little section of the brain. So if you look at them, they're like on a chessboard. They divide and conquer the brain tissue in little pieces. And each one of them is sort of responsible for a little piece of it.
It's a little waste collecting site, eh?
Yes. So this is normally, right? During injury, they can migrate. So they can move very rapidly, very quickly to the site of injury, because when there is injury or infection, there is a need for a more localized response. So they can migrate from where they normally sit toward the site of injury that's nearby. And they're very quick, very fast. And if it's a pathogen, they fight the pathogen and then they clean up the mess. If it's for some reason, like the brain dying because of Alzheimer's, they again migrate to the site of neurodegeneration to again clean up the dead bodies, the dead neurons. And this is that normal function, not just in the brain, but in everywhere else in the body. Macrophages normally, in normal situation, not in a situation of inflammation or, say, infection, what they normally do is to clean up dead cells, tissue debris, kind of normal body waste.
So all the cells produce poop, if you will.
Yeah, very much so.
Now tell us, what happens in a neurodegenerative disease like Alzheimer's? What's different about that and the microglia?
I would say in pretty much when you look at Alzheimer's of any neurodegenerative disorders, normally when you go to the neurologist because you have either your family or yourself realize there is an issue, that's already a very advanced stage of disease. And when that happens, and you know, and especially post-mortem, you know, after death, when people look at these brains, there is, you know, massive neurodegeneration. However, these diseases, and in all of these diseases, Alzheimer's and all these neurodegenerative diseases, when are sort of looked at the very end stage of disease, this massive neurodegeneration leads in all of them to activation of these macrophages, because again, these are cells that have evolved to respond to injury. So in the presence of massive injury, they are all activated. However, we know now that for Alzheimer's, but also many others, that Alzheimer's in particular, that the disease process starts 20, 30 years earlier in, I would say, midlife. And coming from the genetics perspective, we don't really know at what stage of disease macrophages are playing a role in modulating the risk of each one of us for developing Alzheimer's. To an extreme, it could be that the risk of Alzheimer's disease driven by the cells is due to their role. Again, going back to what I was telling earlier, to neuronal, the brain development, these cells, macroglia, when the fetus form and the brain forms, they also help in sculpting the neural circuits and the brain. They eat neurons that are made in excess. And when the brain finds its connections and the synapses and the neurons find the right way to connect with each other to build this computer, the extra stuff gets removed by, again, it's kind of waste and gets removed by microglia. And so it could be to an extreme that microglia misfunctioning early in life may lead to the development of a brain or a wiring of the brain that's more or less resilient to the aging process. You know, you're sort of wired as a baby to either have or not have Alzheimer's 8 years later. So this is like to an extreme, but I'm just driving to that extreme because just to say that just because we see activation of microglia in pretty much all neurodegenerative disorders in their late stage, it doesn't mean that that is the stage at which these cells operate to make you less or more susceptible to disease. It may be much, much earlier. It could be midlife. It could be even in utero. So we actually don't know that yet. Everybody looks in AD brains because those are the patients. But I think at that stage, everything is done at that point.
And Dado, you found something in your research at Mount Sinai at the Icahn School of Medicine. You found something that controls the microglia. Is that what I understand?
Yes. So we identified two genes, two particular types of genes. These are called transcription factors. So these are genes that control other genes. So you can think of them as the directors of the orchestra. We have the genome, and the genome is made of genes, and these genes make all the different bits and parts of the cells, which then make our bodies. But to orchestrate these thousands of genes, there are a few genes that, again, coordinate this rest of the musicians to play a piece. And these are sort of these transcription factors. And we identify two of them, which we demonstrate regulate the behavior, sort of the music, they dictate the music that these macrophages play in order to, again, better function as garbage cleaner to prevent, we think, the, again, buildup of waste that later on may lead to Alzheimer's disease.
Is there information on how we can control those genes? In other words, are there epigenes that allow us to control those genes?
So these are transcription factors. We know they are sensitive to the level of course, they orchestrate the response to damaged tissue. So, and especially tissue that's very rich in fat. So they are very responsive to like fat overload, which is what you would expect when a tissue like the brain degenerates. So the brain is probably actually the most fat-rich tissue in the body. Is 70% of the brain is made of fat. It's like foie gras. And you can imagine then with aging or more so in a disease like Alzheimer, there is sort of a disruption of this tissue. And there is, because it's mainly made of fat, this creates a lot of fat-rich waste, which then triggers these transcription factors to direct the microglia toward clearance of this fat-rich waste.
And does, if we eat more fat or go on a ketogenic diet, does that turn on this system or do we not know yet?
We do not know yet. An interesting fact about these genes is that they were originally identified as clock genes. So maybe a connection, something that we could think about modulating them is better sleep, taking care of our sleep, that there is actually quite a bit of research showing that. And we know with aging, our sleep gets disrupted. So I think maintaining healthy sleep habits is going to be important for Alzheimer's disease, maybe through or not through these genes. But in general, I would say if there is anything connecting sort of a lifestyle intervention to these genes is this circadian rhythm, this clock, sleep-related function of these genes.
So when you fly out of New York back to, if you go across time barriers, you're hurting your control of your own microglia.
Yes, and macrophages. Again, the intriguing part of the study is also that what we discovered in microglia in the brain in Alzheimer's disease is very, very similar, so recapitulated in macrophages of the periphery when they are dealing, again, with diseases of lipid-rich tissue. So, for example, macrophages in obese, in the fat tissue of obese individuals, macrophages in the liver of people with
non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Fatty liver disease, yes. macrophages that form the atherosclerotic plaques in, you know, cardiovascular disease. So everywhere macrophages are faced with a lot of fat and lipid waste that's generated in the course of disease, these transcription factors are there to push them, to instruct them to mop up this extra fat, whether it's in the brain or in an atherosclerotic plaque or in a fatty liver or obese fat tissue, doesn't really matter. The same music is played. And this music is there, this activity is there to boost their ability to clear up this extra fat that gets released by the tissue becoming diseased or becoming losing integrity.
So, if you will, the Mount Sinai School is known for its translational research, that is taking research from the bench and taking it to the bedside. How do you anticipate doing that with this? Where do you expect to go? Will we learn to control this and thus control destruction? Or if we control this, will we leave more waste product in the brain to have more inflammation?
Actually, before Mount Sinai, I actually came back to academia from what you call it big pharma. So I had some drug discovery experience. And back to academia, I actually brought that desire and that expertise with me. So we have actually already have kind of drug discovery projects in the lab targeting transcription factors. Now, this one specifically, yeah, because this is a very recent discovery, but other transcription factors, one in particular that we identified in 2017, and that has, you know, in about, what, 6 years now, 7 years, again, has gone from genetic discovery to candidate lead molecules that we are already performed screens and we already sort of validated and published, actually in collaboration with the MIT. And so, although transcription factors are historically difficult to drug, what's druggable and what's not is rapidly changing. It's a very dynamic space, and we have had some success with the one transcription factors, and we hope to have the same success in drugging these specific transcription factors, because the problem with Alzheimer's is very polygenic disease, and kind of targeting one gene at a time is very difficult. But targeting the director of the orchestra, which then can instruct thousands of other genes, I think it's our approach to have a bigger impact, bigger effect. But they are, again, they're not easy targets, but definitely.
So if I can summarize some of the things I've learned, Addo, from our talk and your education of me, is that monocytes turn into macrophages and microglia, that the ones in the periphery don't go to the brain and vice versa, and the ones that are formed in the brain each have their own discrete region of the brain that they mop up waste in, but they migrate at time of injury, and that there are two genes, if you will, that at least have been shown by your laboratory at Mount Sinai, the Icahn School of Medicine, that regulate these genes. And part of that is relating to fat. And so we see the activation of these genes that make inflammation worse, actually, in peripheral vascular disease or in vascular disease that involves the heart and the blood vessels to the brain, and that are probably heated up by non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and other things. So that's one of the mechanisms by which fat augments inflammation by augmenting this process. Thank you very much. And to find out more information, you can go to Icahn Medical School or icahn.sm.edu/research/lobe.alzheimer's, or just look at research and Alzheimer's and you'll probably find it. Thank you very much. And again, we are brought to you by, and this is 1199B, that's 20 years or plus of podcasting on this. And hopefully you enjoyed learning about microglia and monocytes as much as I did. We should thank Life's First Naturals for producing both bovine colostrum and Trubiotics. I don't know what they do to monocytes or to microglia, But I do know that the randomized controlled trials in humans, you can find on their website and show what they do to things relating to your health. The other sponsor is Longevity Playbook, longevityplaybook.com. Go to their site to find and sign up for the free newsletter. Thank you very much, Dado. We've been speaking with Eduardo, E-D-O-A-R-D-O, Dado, D-A-D-O, Marcora, M-A-R-C-O-R-A. So you can go, it's probably Marcora Lab at Mount Sinai to find out more information. Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you and learning more about microglia and monocytes in the brain in the future. Thanks again.